Hi, this is Pete Link, and we're back at churchandgospel.com. It's Thursday. We want to talk doctrine. We want to try to think about the Christian life according to the Scriptures. And so today, I'm delighted that I have one of my friends here yet again, Dr. Ed Gravely. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. Definitely glad to be with you. We're going to talk about a topic that may prove controversial when all said and done, but it's very important. It's at the heart of where the church was, perhaps where the heart of where the church is and where it will be until the Lord returns, and that is the connection between Christians, false teaching, and the problem or the hope of hospitality. You tell me, is it a problem or a hope?
Well, there's a great deal of discussion about it. There are a number of New Testament texts that, one in particular, in 2 John, the famous one, that seem to say that if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, and he's referring to false teaching, then the text says, do not welcome that person into your house, do not even greet them, because to welcome them or to greet them is to participate in their evil, he says.
Well, that's going to need some clarification, I suppose, which is good, because there's a lot there. Does that mean that if I see somebody who's a heretic, like a Jehovah's Witness, like anyone I might imagine to be a heretic, should I have no interaction with them at all? Should I help them? Should I be kind? How do I put this together? This is a great topic. I'm glad you're going to guide us through it. So in addition to this text in 2 John, is this the only text that deals with this?
I actually think that it is, and here's why. Because the only text that deals with it specifically, now there are other texts that deal with false teachers. You can read about that in Jude or in 2 Peter and Colossians and so forth. But this is the only one that really gives us those very specific instructions to the church. And it is those specific instructions that I think we should pay attention to. It's also worth mentioning that there are other passages that seem similar to this, but are actually about church discipline. And there's no indication that this what we see here is church discipline. This goes into a different category.
Right.
So if you're thinking of 2 Thessalonians or 1 Corinthians, where it says, don't associate with this person or put them out of the church, those kind of things, that's not exactly the issue that we're talking here.
Gotcha.
That's the issue of, a person in the church who is living in open sin against rebellion against God. This is a person who, well, to tell the story of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, this is a person who is essentially a missionary who is preaching a different Jesus and a different gospel.
And that's really key. The essence of heresy is not just getting something wrong. I mean, in one sense, we all get something wrong.
Right.
But heresy is that which is a direct doctrinal affront to who God is, who man is, and or to the cross. Therefore, it does hinder salvation, does it not?
It does. And in fact, there's a story to 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. And to those of you out there who are the budding Johannine scholars, you'll know that there's a lot of—
I just like the word Johannine.
I do too. It's hard to spell, though. because Microsoft Word doesn't know how to spell it.
That's right.
So there are, and there are a number of scholars who have, there's no end of the discussion of the authorship of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, how they might be connected, and even what order they might be written in. But I think it's fair to say that a majority of scholarship settles on a common author for 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, and that they were roughly written in that order, and that they tell one story. And I would further add, where most evangelical scholars are, and that is the author of that, is actually John the Apostle himself.
Right, absolutely.
And so I think there's good evidence for that. So the story, though, is very important.
This is the story of 1 John, 2 John, and 3 John as a group.
They together tell us an important story, and the Gospel of John actually fits into that story as well. So what we know is that by the time we get to the late 1st century, maybe around 80, between 80 and 90, maybe getting close to 90, there were real problems with regards to false teachings in Asia Minor, where John the Apostle was. And again, these are, as you said, well put, these are not denominational issues. This is not Methodists and Presbyterians or Northern Baptists and Southern Baptists. These are people who may be connected to some of the second century heresies that we know about, Gnosticism or Doceticism, but they were very much preaching a different Jesus. They were, as John himself says, denying that Jesus was the Christ who came in the flesh. Mm-hmm. And so, again, this is not, your church does baptism this way, my church does the Lord's Supper this way. This is Christianity versus not Christianity,
right.
I think. And so, but what happened is those false teachers had made their way into the church, and there was a blow up. And you can read about that blow up in 1 John, a schism, as it's very often called. And they left the church. You know, John says, you know, they went out from us because they were not of us. And they went out into the world. And he calls them antichrists.
And many antichrists are in the world.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of that could be said about how that connects to the antichrist of Revelation and the man of sin. But John's point there is that there are those who are Christ's, and that's the Orthodox, the church that John is writing to. And then there are these other people, and they are quite literally antichrist.
So an anti there could be in place of.
Yeah, if you take John's three tests to be a dialogue about these false teachers,
right.
Then it is a denial of righteous living, it is a denial of love for the brethren, and it is a denial that Jesus was the Christ who came in the flesh.
Mm. Those obviously would be major issues. If you were to move away from any of those core beliefs from the New Testament and Old Testament, you are walking away from the knowledge of God that was in the faith once for all passed to the saints.
You are, no doubt about that. As John says, you are walking out of the light and into darkness. And so now, but 1 John is written as an encouragement to the church that was left behind after the schism.
Right.
In other words, they were. You can imagine what would happen if half of your congregation left believing a different Jesus. And so John is writing to them to say, look, guys, you believe what the apostles believe. We actually saw Jesus. This is John 1. They didn't see Jesus, but we did. We actually saw him. We touched him. We watched him. Our hands handled him. And so we know him, and you have fellowship with us. Therefore, you have fellowship with him. In other words, you believe what we believe. Therefore, you're right, and they're wrong. And he's encouraging them, here's how we know that you're right, because you are striving to live righteously, because you guys love one another, and because you believe that Jesus was the Christ who came in the flesh.
Very good.
So then what you get in, so that's 1 John. What you get then in 2 John, I think, is sort of the next version of the story, which is John has more, the elder, if you prefer, John, the apostle, I think, has more to say about these false teachers in 2 John. Because one of the things we know about John and his community is that they were missionaries. And there was a large missionary network in Asia Minor. But the antichrists, when these false teachers left the church, they kept up their missionary enterprise with a great deal of fervor.
Right.
And you see that missionary language all throughout 2 John. In verse 7, he says, they went out from us into the world. And that's the going out. That's the language of mission in the writings of John. They went out into the world. Then in verse 8 in 2 John, he says, I want you guys to watch out that you do not lose what it is that you've worked for, what we've worked for. And that's the missionary network. These antichrists, these false teachers are in danger of really hindering the missionary network, of wrecking the mission. Then in verse 9, he actually says, you know, they've run on ahead. Literally, he says they've gone on ahead. I think that's ahead of the other missionaries. But they go without Christ. They've left Christ behind. And then in verse 10, that's where he says, and so if any of them come to you, do not invite them into your house. Don't even greet them. Don't participate with their evil. And so that's the very specific set of circumstances that I think we need to begin to try to unpack what exactly is going on there in verse 10.
Yeah, so what we have is the reality that there are many people who use the name Jesus, Mormons, Jehovah's Witness,
right,
who mean indeed a very different Jesus. I mean, ontologically, if their description of Jesus is categorically different from anything the Orthodox faith would say amongst Protestants, amongst Roman Catholics, amongst
right.
Eastern Orthodox, we would altogether define an Orthodox Jesus. But Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses clearly would not do that. So interacting, a Baptist and a Presbyterian interacting is not the same as a believer and a heretic interacting.
Right. From a Baptist perspective, a Presbyterian is not Antichrist. And from
Correct.
A Methodist perspective, a Baptist is not Antichrist. Exactly.
Right. And unfortunately, that is historically how many times we've treated each other.
Right.
But indeed, this is a very important distinction that we're dealing with a problem of a false knowledge of God. And when these folks go ahead, they're passing on this false knowledge,
That's right.
which therefore complicates the work of the actual missions force.
Yeah, you cannot look at even the modern day groups that you've named, the Jehovah's Witness and the Mormons, and say they don't have a missionary fervor.
Well, they most certainly
do.
Yeah.
And the antichrists, those false teachers that set 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John are about, they had that same missionary fervor. And they were apparently, if I read 2nd John correctly, they were apparently trying to hijack the missionary network. You know, if a missionary is trying to make it from point A to point B, you might be the church, the stop off along the way. And what those churches were doing is they were receiving the missionaries, they were feeding them, they were housing them, they were giving them money and sending them on their way. And John wants to make sure the churches are aware all of the people who are coming to you on this network may not actually be Orthodox. Mm-hmm. And so you need to test the spirits, as he says in 1 John. And so when those people come along, when the false teacher missionary comes along, John says, do not invite them into your house. Now, what's interesting is the you there is plural.
Right.
It's y'all, if you prefer.
You guys.
Yeah. And I think that's an indication that when he says house here, he's not talking about inviting your Mormon neighbor over for dinner. That word house, that's probably the church. That's probably the house church there among those Christians. And he's talking about making sure that these people who are claiming to be Christ's, but are actually antichrist, he says, you don't give them any place in the church. Don't give them any authority. And in fact, he says, don't receive them. Don't send them on their way. Don't even greet them, in the sense that he doesn't want anybody in Asia Minor to be confused, right, as to who is the Orthodox and who is not, as to who has the real Jesus.
So this is the problem the church has in interacting with the lost world, whether it be with heretics, outright, or atheist, or what have you, is what we are encountering is a false knowledge of God. And so when we go out into the world, how do we interact with these lost folks? Well, that is indeed a challenging question. Christians at some times have tried to burn heretics.
Right.
Christians at times have tried to call heretics to change their views. Christians have done a number of different things, good, bad, and all sorts in between, because the challenge is, how do we rightly reveal God in a world where people do not know God? And I think that's why this is such a pressing thing. How you respond to a Mormon missionary is tied to your desire to reveal God rightly to others and to them. And this is the problem that I think you're addressing with John. If people see the seal of the house, the seal of the church upon them, they're going to, this must be a right understanding of God.
Right, just another denomination.
Right. And so this is, a lot of times, what I understand is one of the great things about the Jesus, the Messiah, God, the second person of the Trinity, being called the Word, is that there is never a time where Jesus ever spoke a false word about his Father.
Right.
Not once. He is the Word. Everything that he said and did, I believe English is my second language, first language, who knows, everything that he said and did was to rightly describe his Father. Unfortunately, we're not Jesus, and it's hard to figure out how to do the both and there. So these instructions in 2 John are helping, you're helping us begin to have those categories. But you said this is not the same as church discipline, so I cannot just throw them out into the street, so to speak. I can't put the seal of the church approval on them. So how is this different from church discipline, and how do I begin to find a way to act with heretics?
Right. Well, first of all, the church discipline assumes that the person is a part of us. You know, when the church is many things, one of the things that the church is we submit as a part of the church, the local church, we submit ourselves corporately to a standard of righteousness. We hold one another accountable. We help one another. But when a person refuses to submit themselves to that standard of righteousness, I think this is Paul's theology in 2 Thessalonians and in 1 Corinthians.
Yes.
That person has already put themselves out of the church, and we don't do them any favors by pretending like they're still in it.
That's right.
And that's why he says, you know, if a person is, for in 2 Thessalonians, it's idle, a person who had basically quit work and was mooching off the church. And he says, you need to distance yourself from that person. He says, now don't, you know, don't treat him like an enemy. You know, you're treating him like a brother. But what's wrong with him needs to be fixed, and you don't need to participate in his error. So put him out of the church. Same thing in 1 Corinthians 5. The person is this issue of sexual immorality.
Right.
Paul says, treat him like an unbeliever. Put him. He's already put himself out of the church, and you don't do him or anybody else any favors by continuing to pretend like he's in it. The false teachers in the story of 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, though, John is very clear. They were never a part of us. They are not from us. That's why they went out from us, because they were never a part of us. And so it's not, whereas the goal of church discipline is ultimately restoration. The goal of dealing with heretics is about all of those things you said, which is, We don't want to give them any aid. In fact, John says some pretty scary. He says a pretty scary thing there in verse 10, because if you support them, he says you are participating in their evil work. And so, again, as I read the context of 2 John, I don't think this means I can't invite my Mormon neighbor over for dinner, but it certainly does mean if my Mormon neighbor's kid is trying to raise money to go on a mission trip, that's out of bounds for me. I can't be a part of that.
And that's an important distinction.
It is.
And what we're trying to get to is, what does it mean to love the unbeliever, especially the heretic in this situation? It is very easy to you can visualize, well, are you saying, Dr. Gravely, that I should, next time I see a Jehovah's Witness, I should stand in front of where they are and yell loudly and create chaos? I don't think that's what we're saying. There are ways that you can rightly reveal God to the benefit of anyone who's interacting with what you're saying and doing, even the one who is the heretic. And so our great affection, for example, I have several friends make it a great habit. When Mormon missionaries come, as you know, they have an older person and a younger person. Yeah. And what you have a godly, kind discussion with them. And you ask them questions that, quite frankly, Mormonism does not answer too well. The younger one has no idea of the answers. And what you're doing is you're exposing to the younger one how incomplete these answers are. And one of the most effective things always to do is, as you greet them with hospitality, with kindness, as you try to reach to them, you don't go and say, "Hey, why don't you go talk to my neighbor down the street?"
Right, yeah.
This is what I think you're headed, is don't aid them in their endeavor,
no,
but aid them in helping them see rightly who God is. And that is going to come down to being able to have a discussion about the scriptures.
It is, and it's, I think, we don't often find ourselves in the exact same situation that the churches in Asia Minor in 2 John would find themselves. It's unlikely that we're going to get cold called on by a guy claiming to be a missionary wanting to spend the night and help getting on to the next mission stop. That's just not, we do missions very differently.
Correct.
But I do think that they're, in addition to, what do you do when the Jehovah's Witness comes to the door? You know, again, you befriend them. But when John says, you know, you don't invite them into your house, again, that's giving them entrance into the church. You don't do that. You know, you don't have the Mormon missionary come speak to your Sunday school class about orphan care, you know, those kind of things. But I think there's also another admonition here that we haven't talked about, and that is the church. We're Southern Baptist, and so, you know, we default often to the International Mission Board to handle many of these issues for us. But it is our job as a church and as a collection of churches to make sure of the doctrinal soundness of the people that we are sending in our name as missionaries to tell people about Jesus. And so I know it's, everybody loves to criticize the IMB these days, but the IMB having qualifications for missionaries to have been in a Baptist church, to have been baptized, to have some kind of ongoing seminary education is all their ways of making sure that we don't actually end up sending Antichrist to the mission field in our name. And I think that's very much honoring to what John is getting on about in 2 John.
And part of what makes dealing with heresy so difficult is people typically come to heresy out of good motivations, out of solving some theological problem in an incomplete way, that, but it is dealing with the problem. Gnostics, whatever type of heretic you want, they're not intentionally trying to do harm to the knowledge of God, but they are. And this is why the scriptures are the powerful weapon to defuse and to demarcate and do all the things we need to do in contrast with these heretics. And so you're right, it's not the same thing as church discipline. These are not brothers. And so we interact with them in the way we interact with unbelievers. And in so doing, we are trying to assist them to come to know the God. And in so doing, let God dismantle their missions network and not assist in that. I think that's very, very helpful.
My wife and I, to be frank, my wife and I have been through this somewhat. You know, I interact with a lot of students, and we constantly get people, you know, who are sending us, their kids are sending us letters saying they want to go on this mission trip or that mission trip. And there have been times where we have just not felt like we could support it because of the nature of the organization they were going with.
Right.
And, you know, you feel bad for the kid, but there's just, you know, we only have a limited amount of missions money, and we want to make sure that it is meeting the scriptural requirements as set forth in 2 John, that we are not supporting a message about Jesus that is not actually orthodox, that we don't want to speed them on their way. We don't want to participate in their evil work.
Yeah, and I think this also points to one other thing I'll throw out, which is the importance for Baptists in particular to connect our concrete ideas that we see in the Baptist faith and message to the larger picture of orthodoxy. Indeed, it is one of the things that we are trying to do as we interact with students who are, for example, of different backgrounds and so forth.
Right.
But to show the genuine orthodox nature of the Baptist faith and message, which it is.
Yeah.
It's not only orthodox. I think it's probably a great way. Not probably, it is a great way to understand the Christian faith in a very historic sense. What that requires for us is to deepening our knowledge of the Scriptures, deepening our knowledge of church history, and especially tied to that, deepening our knowledge of the ancient creedal confessions. And indeed, those become ways that maybe we can begin to have some clarity about who and how and where we interact with.
Yeah. I was going to say, for us, that looks, in fact, we have used in our own family, we have used the 2 John, the three criteria there in 2 John. As long as we keep these three things in mind, I think we're doing well. To ask the question, what I'm about to support, the missionary I'm about to help send, the money I'm about to give, number one, does it allow entrance into the church or give the authority of the church to somebody who is really preaching a different Jesus?
That's an important test.
Yeah, and as you began, these are cardinal doctrines. I personally, we only have a limited amount of money, so we give our missions money to the IMB, but I wouldn't say anybody was way out of bounds to support, a Presbyterian missionary or a Methodist mission. I mean, that's a decision for you. We only have limited money, so we give it to Southern Baptist. But
and we just want to say we really love Annie Armstrong and Lottie Moon.
Absolutely, absolutely. The Christmas mission offering has actually been very impactful in our family, to my daughter maybe even wanting to be a missionary because of it. So that's the first thing. Then he also says, do not receive him into your house or give him any greeting. I think that the second thing there is, is our participation in this thing going to give legitimacy to a message or to a group or to a person that we don't want to give legitimacy to based on the fact that it's not orthodox?
Right.
And then the third thing he says there is, for whoever greets him takes part in his wicked works. Mm. And that's strong language. And as you point out, these are not wicked people, but I think John is clear, to go in the name of Christ and to preach a different gospel, whether out of ignorance or out of, complicity, John does describe that as a wicked work.
That's right.
And so we want to make sure, I always want to make sure that that's not what we're a part of, that mm-hmm. we are loving people, very much loving people, and being kind to them and compassionate to them and trying to help them to see the truth. But that by doing so, we are not participating in the wicked work here is very specific. It is the traveling missionary who is preaching a different version of Jesus, who has denied that Jesus is the Christ who came in the flesh. I wouldn't try to read beyond that. But I think those three criteria are actually very important in helping us sort through how should Christians respond to false teaching with genuine biblical hospitality, but without digging ourselves, without participating in the wicked work of sharing a false Jesus.
And the wisdom required to answer those questions is found in Scripture. It's found by the Spirit, but also just the local church itself becomes a means to help us
Absolutely.
Think through that. So that's excellent. Those are great down-to-earth categories. I think it's very applicable to how we deal with missionaries that come our way. So this has been a very helpful discussion, Ed. I'm glad you joined us today.
Oh, thank you.
Well, join us next week at churchandgospel.com, and we'll continue to discuss theology. We'll continue to think about the nature of God in Christ, and we are grateful to have you join us here each week. Thank you. We'll see you next time.